Welcome to Comic Culture here on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster Radio, now also podcast on comicbookdaily.com. I'm your co-host, Walter Duralia, joined as always by my co-host, Chris Owen, professor of comic history here at Hamilton's Mohawk College. Hey, Chris.
Walter, how are you today on this glorious Wednesday, November the 11th?
It is. It's a remembrance of November the 11th. So we've had our moment of silence before the show, Chris.
Yes, we did. We had at 11, right?
Yes. And wish everybody a pleasant Memorial Day.
A solemn Memorial Day.
Memorial Day. But you know what? Not even Memorial Day, Chris, can stop the comics.
Can hold back comics.
Can hold back comics. The show must go on.
That's right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I know we didn't really think of this earlier, and we probably should have, but we should have done some sort of Memorial Day special. You know, talking about like the old, like, you know, the fighting Yanks,
yes,
and stuff,
you know,
like that.
We'll ad lib later.
All right. Okay, we'll see what we can do. Okay. But first off, we got the new comic book day.
That's right. Well, actually, it's the new comics that are released today.
Well, you know what I meant. Yeah,
right.
That's fair.
We like to start every show highlighting a few of the comics that are hitting the stands of your local comic shops today. So listen up. We have from Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man number 611 hits the stands today. Now, people are excited about this because Deadpool.
Deadpool's in there.
Yes.
Well, you know, Deadpool is extremely popular these days.
Yes.
And although I'm not a big fan, I'm not a big fan of what they did with him in the movie.
Uh-uh.
However, I've always enjoyed the comic, and I always thought it was very well done, very well written.
Yes.
And
yes.
You know, back when Ed McGuinness was drawing it in the first issue, kind of thing, way back in the day.
It's good stuff, and I know people have been talking about this issue for the last couple of months. Can't wait for the Deadpool issue to come out. Also for Marvel, Punisher Max number 1. It's an all-new ongoing from Jason Aaron, who wrote Wolverine Weapon X, and Steve Dillon, who wrote Welcome Back, Frank.
Well, Steve Dillon, he's been around for a long time.
Dillon drew.
Drew. Steve Dillon was the artist of all the whole Preacher series, and did a lot of it's always been a lot of the Punisher series as well.
Yes.
Great stuff.
Yeah, you know what? And Punisher still has a massively loyal, base.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see a new ongoing starting off for Marvel there.
Yep, that's awesome. Very good.
Going over to DC, Chris, today.
Yes.
Always anticipated, the Batman and Robin number 6 comes out
today. Very good, yep.
Probably,
it's,
I think.
Frank Quitely and
Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I mean, obviously there's a blip right now on DC side with The Darkest Night, and that stuff is going great.
Well,
well, but I think, like, for just kind of continuity type of thing, the Batman and Robin is DC's
best-selling
book. You
know what? And we've talked about this before, about how, you know, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely did amazing work on All-Star Superman, and now with All-Star Batman and Robin, they're doing really great guns.
Yes.
It's phenomenal stuff.
You're right.
Yeah.
Over on Dark Horse.
Yes.
Dark Horse, what they are releasing today is a...
another Star Wars book.
It's called Star Wars Purge.
Hey, how did I know?
Yeah, and it's called Seconds to Die, and it's a one-shot written by John Osterlund. And
Osterlund or John Ostrander?
Ostrander.
Okay.
Australia.
Spain. No, written by John Australia.
Spain, Alex.
Okay, so John Ostrander, he's been around for a long time.
Yes, and it's a one-shot, and it continues on from the events of Revenge of the Sith.
Lots
of Star Wars fans out there, always looking for new material.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's
cool. Very good. Very good.
All right, so we'll end it there. It's a busy show today. We, as always, people, please visit your local comic shop, support your local comic shop, check out the new this week. Today.
Excellent idea.
Okay.
Okay.
Chris, we'll jump into some industry news.
Okay.
It's, I told you before, I really enjoy
industry
jumping
news.
On the net.
Yes.
Searching and surfing. For, you know, useful and something.
I hear kids using the internet thing these days. I guess it's going to be big. I don't know.
One day.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know what? I like searching for, you know, important stories, and I like searching for useless stories, too.
Do half of those, quote-unquote, important stories have a couple of three X's, perhaps, after the before the .com? I mean, I'm just curious.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's all business, Chris.
I'm sure it is.
What we will start with is, I don't know the young man's, I don't know who the young man is. A guy named Reeve Carney.
Okay.
He's been cast as the Broadway Spidey.
Oh, okay.
You know that Peter Parker.
Is that actually back on now?
Yeah. It's Turn Off the Dark. Broadway musical based on the exploits of Spidey.
Right.
This guy is some sort of rock roll star.
Really?
Okay. And he will portray Peter Parker in the play.
And his name is Reeve Carney.
Reeve Carney.
Okay. To all of our listeners out there, if you know anything about this Reeve Carney guy,
yes.
I implore you to email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or mailbox at bigbcomics.com.
Yes.
Let us know who this Reeve Carney guy is. Yes. I've never heard of him. I'm sure he's got to be, you know, at least a little more spindly than Lemmy from Motorhead. So, you know, like, I'm sure he's got
You know what? I saw a picture. He's like a pretty boy. Yeah. On the internet.
Okay,
so,
all right.
You know, hopefully, hey, he's got good pipes. Hopefully, he can belt out the tune.
All right, fair enough. Well, you know, what's his name? From Kiss was Phantom of the Opera for a little while.
Paul Stanley?
Yeah, Paul Stanley. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, hey, you know what? The crossover from rock and roll to theater, why not?
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, like you mentioned, though, financing is still an issue.
Well, last I heard, you know, remember Bono was still doing like the songs and stuff like that?
I think that's still a go, but the great part is because they have to convert this theater. I think it's the Hilton Theater down on Broadway or something.
Okay.
And they're converting it, retrofitting it, because there's a lot of special effects.
Sure, sure.
They got to put more.
They got to have Doc Ock's arms.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah, pillars and beams and stuff like that.
Venom's webs. And
they're saying who they is doesn't matter. But they're saying that Spider-Man will have to sell out every show for as many as 4 years.
Really?
Just to simply break even.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? Now that Disney owns Marvel, does that mean that Mickey Mouse is going to make an appearance?
You know what? I think they're going to save Mickey to if they're starting to lose money or something.
You know what?
Mickey is like jumping the shark.
I think it'd be great if they got like Cinderella or like Belle or something from Beauty and the Beast to be like the female lead,
right?
With Spider-Man.
Yes, you see, because they're
what a great crossover.
Now hold on, which Disney plays were on Broadway?
Beauty and the Beast,
right?
Yeah.
So
and Lion King, they could have Simba come in and do a couple leaps.
Now that whole cast have like a crossover. Awesome.
Worst crossover ever.
Right. You know, Marvel will teach Disney all about crossovers.
I'm sure.
Okay. Check this out. This is going to be great.
Okay.
Variety's reporting that Anna Faris.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
And Justin Timberlake are gearing up for the roles in the live-action Yogi Bear film.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, boo-boo.
Somebody stole my picnic basket.
Hey, pardon me, Mr. Forest Ranger, sir. That's a terrible Yogi Bear.
But gee, Yogi, maybe you shouldn't be stealing the picnic basket.
Okay, boo-boo. Boy, pretty,
pretty worst impersonations ever.
Anyway, it's going to be a combination CGI and live action.
Okay.
I know Garfield was that.
That's
not canal water, right?
It was horrible.
That was terrible.
I think Bill Murray needed a new golf course or something.
Yeah. And I mean, I hope this goes well, because come on, Yogi Berra.
With Yogi Berra.
Yogi Berra starring Yogi Berra. Deja vu all over again. All right.
Well, the best part about that movie is Anna Faris, because she's kind of hot.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Right. That'll sell tickets if nothing else will. What else we have? Publishers Weekly, you know, kind of a big new organization and stuff like that. Well, they had their a little early, I thought, but they had their on their website the top 10 comics of 2009.
Oh, get out, really? You
know, picked by Publishers Weekly.
Oh, well, and they would know, right?
Absolutely.
Because they're publishers.
Yes.
They're not the fans.
No.
No.
But they've picked Parker the Hunter by Darwin Cook.
Well, that's excellent. Okay, yeah. That's good. Good call.
Something called Driven by Lemons by Josh Cotter.
Never even heard of it.
Oh!
I don't think it's Welcome Back, Cotter.
Mr. Cotter!
Hey, Horshack!
Logic Comics, An Epic Search for Truth.
Okay.
That's yep. One that we talked about.
Yeah, I've seen that before, yeah.
Yeah. The Photographer, Into War-Torn Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
What else we have? We got, something that we both liked. There's a Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe.
Nice. Okay, yeah. Very good.
What else we have? A Drifting Life by Yoshihiro Suzuki.
Okay.
Ichiro Suzuki.
David Suzuki?
No. Tamsumi. Tamsumi.
Right.
Yoshihiro Tamsumi. Obviously manga, or maybe not manga, but...
Probably.
And something called Pluto from Viz Media. By another Japanese guy named Urasawa.
Yeah. Very good.
You know what? It's good. It's good that Publishers Clearing House. Publishers Clearing House.
Ed McMahon. Ed McMahon.
Publishers.
If you subscribe to Time Magazine,
yes, you can.
You can win.
My point is,
yes.
My point is this: it's good. That, you know, that they had their top 10 hardcovers and fiction and stuff.
Yes.
It's really nice seeing all these organizations now are doing their top 10 graphic novels, too. They're including it in all their top 10 lists.
You know what? And they wouldn't have done that years ago.
No.
So that's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. Now, Chris, we're doing great. We're having a nice early...
Lots of time going on here.
We're having a nice early show, which is good because...
Well, you've got a big surprise for us here.
Yeah,
don't you?
What I want to talk about for our feature for this radio show is
as opposed to somebody else's radio show.
No, I meant as opposed to last week's or next week's.
Right.
Is talk about I think the website was it's Comic Book Resources. I think actually this story is carried in the New York Times, NewYorkTimes.com. It's on their website.
Okay.
It's Marvel's 70th anniversary.
Right.
Marvel Comics,
it's a big
started
deal.
1939.
Yep.
With the release of who are the first two Marvel heroes? Young Chris, Submariner,
Submariner, Human Torch,
Human Torch, yeah, in Marvel Comics
number one. Interestingly enough, the Human Torch was actually a robot when he first appeared.
Yes.
Right, he was a creation of like a mad scientist kind of guy. He was hoping to create the perfect human being, but he was always on flames. And,
right,
and yeah,
right.
And,
okay, so. Excuse me,
but while Walt's dying here of a cough attack, Marvel Comics number one had the first appearance of Human Torch
and
Submariner,
right?
Back in
1939.
Yes.
So,
but that was back published by Timely, right?
Timely,
that
which
was named,
later became
that,
Atlas, which later became Marvel.
Right.
So, anyway, posted on the website there are 70 kind of. Did you know facts, right?
Right.
So I kind of went through them. And
do you have all 70?
No, I picked some good ones.
Okay.
They may not be good, but I picked some...
That are noteworthy.
Okay,
fair enough.
Now, I didn't know this.
Okay.
I knew it was big.
Well, I know it. I am a comic professor, after
all. Yes. X-Men number one, published 1991, is the world's biggest selling comic book.
Yeah, I actually knew that.
It sold over...
Hold on. Let me guess, 8 million copies.
It sold over 8 million copies.
Yeah, I knew that, actually.
Now, it's 1991.
Yeah.
What's staggering now, 18 years later, a really healthy title, like a really strong, Darkest Night, it might be 200-something thousand.
Yeah.
Right? And that's like the best comic going right now.
You got to remember, though, a 1991, height of... comic book speculators. The year or two before, I think it was the year before that, Spider-Man number one came out with Todd McFarlane.
Yes,
everybody was speculating on that.
Right.
Millions of copies have sold of that. I think it was like 3 million of that.
Yep.
X-Men number one with Jim Lee had five covers.
Something like that, you're
five
right.
Five covers.
Yep.
So everybody was buying multiple copies of multiple covers.
The one you bought was the Scratch and Sniff, wasn't it?
That's right. That's right, because I love Gambit so much. Yes, that's right, yeah. Yes. And Wolverine.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you got to remember that at the time, it was a different time period. And remember, just years later, many, many comic book stores went out of business.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I did not know this, but according to Stan Lee, Stan Lee's former business partner, Peter Paul,
yep.
Michael Jackson once came close to owning Marvel.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Really?
There was apparently Michael approached Stan and he wanted the rights to Spider-Man.
I'm sure there must be some sort of joke in there about Jean Grey and the song Beat It, but I'm just
going to stay away from that. You know what? I'm sure there's a gold mine.
But
apparently Michael came to Stan and goes, you know, if I buy Marvel, I mean, sorry.
Wait, what did he say again? If I buy Marvel,
will you beat it? If I buy Marvel, you'll help me run it. You'll help me run it, won't you?
Right.
Right? So, and Stan realized that young Michael... didn't really know the structure of Marvel because Stan at that time didn't own Marvel.
Right.
And so Stan basically told him that, listen, if you end up with control of Marvel, you know, you can hire me and I'll run the company for you, that kind of thing. But it was actually other people, and then it ended up being too much money for Michael.
Maybe Michael Jackson went around wearing the Spider-Man costume himself. He could have been in the Spider-Man play, the musical.
Well, you know what? That's the thing. They're saying that Stan goes, I don't know whether he wanted to, you know, sing or play the role. But,
right.
But anyway, so that was cool, though.
Okay, fair enough.
Young Michael owning... But you know what?
Yeah.
Kudos to the late great, because I love Michael Jackson.
Oh, absolutely. We make fun, but he's amazing.
Smart man.
Absolutely.
He owned the Beatles catalog.
Yep, absolutely.
For Christ's sakes. He owned all the Beatles songs.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
And you know what? Remember, there was in Epcot Center. He had his own 3D action movie called Captain EO.
Yes.
So he was he was always pushing the boundaries, no matter what media he was in,
mm-hmm.
whether it be movies or television or whatever. So
great man.
Absolutely.
Chris, did you know? You probably know this.
Okay.
Knowing you.
Knowing me. Yeah. Knowing me, knowing you.
Listen.
Sorry.
The word sex was concealed in the illustrations of the new X-Men issue number 118.
Yes, I knew this.
At least 18 times.
Yes, I knew this.
One almost every page.
Yes.
The book's artist, Ethan Van Sciver.
Yep.
Said he scattered the words throughout the book because Marvel was annoying him at the time, and he thought it would be fun to inject a little mischief into his work.
I knew about this, actually. Yeah. That has Cyclops, I think, is on the cover of that one.
Now, Grant Morrison wrote that, didn't he? That was during the Morrison run?
I think Frank Quitely actually did the cover to that, yeah.
Right.
I think. Okay. I'm not too sure.
So that's the people, you know, I know you're going to be jotting your pencils down.
Yeah.
New X-Men. Yeah. Issue 118. Now, this isn't a super collectible book, Chris.
No,
I'm sure you'll be able to find it for $5, let's say, or cheaper.
Well, not now. Thanks a lot, Walt.
Well, whatever. you can have one of Chris's 30 copies.
Yeah, right.
So, check it out. I guess you have to kind of really look.
Yeah, you know what?
Hidden the word.
It's all over the place. Sometimes it'll be in plants. Sometimes it'll be in a belt or something like that. Like smoke in the background, things like that. It's all over the place. But yes, it is on every page, and it's even on the cover.
Right.
It's even on the cover, which you wouldn't think. Yeah, it's very cool.
Okay, here's another tidbit.
Okay, tidbit. Give me a tidbit.
The Hulk that appeared on Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno TV show.
Yeah.
Well, the show's executive producer, Kenneth Johnson.
Okay.
This is great. I asked Stan, man, what's the logic of green? Is he the envious Hulk?
Right.
Is he green with envy or jealousy?
No. But
the color of rage is red.
Yes.
Which I was pushing for.
Yes.
Because it's a real human color, you know? When people get flushed with anger.
Right.
This is great. So Lee tells him.
Yeah.
Goes that Hulk had in fact started out gray.
Yes.
But due to problems with color separation at the printers,
Gray
simply wouldn't print. Our printer came to us. That's my Stan Lee voice.
Our printer came to us.
Our printer came to us and said, we can do a pretty consistent green. So we decided to go with green.
So basically, an icon of the Marvel Universe.
Was just a bunch of doofus mistakes, you know. What do you think about it?
Hey, yeah, we can't do gray, so we got to do green. Is that okay with you? Yeah, that's
good. That is so great. I mean, like, when you look back on the origins of this, like, iconic character now.
Oh, absolutely,
Hulk,
yeah.
And you realize it was just all a bunch of mistakes and like, oh, let's try this, and that didn't work. Let's try that. There was no thought put into it.
No, not at all.
So, anyway.
And let's not forget, he had purple pants.
Yes.
Always with the purple pants.
Well, purple did well in, I guess, the ink, right?
The printing process. They mash a whole bunch of other colors printing in there and get purple out of it. Yes,
purple was good. So, anyway, at the end of the day, though, they decided that the Hulk was too iconic as green to change, because
I agree.
He stayed green.
Yeah, because, you know, Lou Ferrigno as like the Red Hulk or Pink Hulk or it just wouldn't work. You got to be green.
If you had a bad TV, the red would be pink.
Yeah, it ain't easy being green.
No,
it ain't easy being green.
Yeah, that's Kermit the Frog sung that really well.
That's right. Yeah, he really did.
Okay, Chris.
Yeah. Yes.
Since that one's going nowhere, we're gonna jump to. we're gonna jump over to. You know, hey, listen.
They can't all be jumped.
Listen, I'm still waiting for the first one. Earlier, you and I talked about Remembrance Day.
Yes.
And so, did you know Captain America? His original shield was the shield shape.
It was like a shield.
It was like a shield, like a knight in shiny armor. It was like a crest.
Yeah, like it had a pointy bottom to it.
And three
little kind of
things.
Yeah,
in the top.
I knew that. Yeah.
So, however, at the time, MLJ, which was the company that eventually made Archie.
Yes.
Through their Pep Comics and other things. They had a character called The Shield.
Yes.
Who had a shield like that.
There's a lot of talk about shields going on right now.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So, Timely at the time goes, man, you know, The Shield is pretty popular.
Yeah.
We don't want to steal his shield and get into trouble later.
Yep.
So we're going to change his shield to round.
And that completely made the character, because he ended up using that to, like,
as a whip,
like he would throw it.
Frisbee.
Yeah, exactly. It was awesome.
And he bought a dog right after that, too. Go to the parks with.
Nice. Okay, moving right along.
What else do I got? Little known fact there that now you know.
That's great.
This is great. Marvel, it's just like all the stuff. Marvel came up with the Transformers names Optimus Prime and Megatron.
What?
Marvel.
Are you sure about that?
In the early 80s, toy manufacturer Hasbro asked Marvel for help in its new action figure line, Transformers.
Yeah?
Yes, because it was a Japanese toys.
Well, they were initially Micronauts. Initially they were meant to be like little things that were hidden in robots in disguise. Yes.
So Denny O'Neil, Jim Shooter, they basically had to come up with backgrounds for these toys and names, because they didn't have American names. It was a Japanese
property. I didn't realize that they came up. I didn't realize that Marvel came up. I thought it was Hasbro that did all that.
And Optimus Prime was Denny's. Megatron was mine.
Get out of town. Yeah. You know what? You have actually stumped me.
See? Isn't that great?
You have actually stumped me on something. There's something about Marvel I did not know here today.
So, but it was all the story was that initially the company didn't like the names, but these guys were too busy and they forgot to change them, and there was a deadline coming, and then they ended up keeping, again, doofuses.
Well, I was going to say, once again, doofuses rule the world, right? Like,
it ends up being.
Just go with that.
Right, exactly. So, Marvel came up with the names Optimus Prime and Megatron from Transformers.
Get out. I had no idea.
Did you know, Chris?
Oh, well, here we go again.
You know,
okay.
Jumping on to the next one.
Yeah.
That Marvel once owned the rights to the word zombie.
Oh, because there was a zombie comic.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't know that.
Sounds, Tales of the Zombies, a magazine from 1973.
Yeah.
So they decided to kind of trademark zombies.
Really?
It took 2 years to get to trademark.
I had no idea that you could actually trademark. I mean, the term zombie, I thought, was like, you know, like vampire.
Right.
Like,
no, apparently they did. Apparently they ended up getting it, but by that time the magazine was canceled.
Oh.
Right? And then it kind of fell out of favor, and then...
great covers.
Yes.
Comic,
I love that. Yeah.
comic blue, but yeah.
But apparently, Marvel and DC had trademarked the phrase superhero.
Yes. Combined. And what's interesting about that is that one of them has, I don't know which one has which, but one of them has a superhero trademark that has a hyphen, and one of them has a superhero trademark that doesn't have a hyphen in the word superhero.
Wow.
That I actually knew, yeah. And so that way, you actually, as far as I know, you still can't use that term. I think it's still trademarked. Whether or not, you know, you can actually get away with it, I don't know. But
man, you must be a hit at parties.
Hey, I got all kinds of useless information about comic books.
Listen.
Yeah.
This is great. I bet you don't know this. Okay. Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Me and Julio. You know Paul?
Yeah, yeah.
Wrote the lyrics and theme song from the 60s Spider-Man cartoon.
Did he really? Da-da-da-da. I had no idea.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah. Really?
Spider-Man. Yeah.
Really?
As a favor to the head of ABC Network, who he knew.
Oh.
Because he didn't want to be associated with kiddie material,
yeah,
he asked that the music be credited to a stage name, Jerry Landis.
Oh.
Isn't that great?
So now, I wonder if he still gets, like, cash for that.
Probably.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
What can you think? Well, why can't you come up with a theme song?
You know what? I don't want to go back to that Flintstones well where they're writing the thing.
Right.
Okay. Oh, this is great.
With
this
eyes as black as frying pans.
Stan Lee, when asked,
yes,
what his most proudest writing for Marvel was,
yep,
Stan Lee said, the strip Stan Lee is most proud of.
Hold on, let me get a strip.
Yeah, like, I guess, you know, the strip.
Okay, yeah, okay.
I don't know. Was the one he wrote for the Incredible Hulk Spider-Man toilet paper.
What?
Now, there was toilet paper made with Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man that had, like, little word bubbles
right,
and had a
right,
story
right.
on it. I guess if you roll it out, you can
actually read
it.
The whole thing?
Yeah, or something like that.
Tune in next week to the next bout of diarrhea.
Man, Mom, can I have more bran?
I can't wait to see
what I'm saying. Next
more
one.
Prune juice, everyone.
Yes. You run and give me some X-Lax.
Anyway,
yeah. So, okay, that's it. Nothing else there.
Fair enough. What more really needs to be said?
Yeah, nothing really.
Sure, fair enough. Yeah, okay.
Hey, artist John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
Based the Daredevil villain,
yes,
Typhoid Mary,
yeah,
on his ex-wife.
Seriously? I had no idea.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's nothing, though. I mean, I've heard you call your ex-girlfriends worse.
You know, it's true.
Mary,
that's true.
Like, that's true. Like a walk in
no,
the park.
I do gotta
stuff
say
I hear coming out of your mouth.
Well, you know, Typhoid Mary, she's crazy, right?
Yes.
Like, she just snaps at any given moment. So,
which is great. I mean, here again, doofuses.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Right. Here's a guy having problems at home, and he comes up with a great villain.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
And she's been around for ages now. Yeah.
Right. Did you know this is great too? Artist Dave Cockrum. Resigned his resignation letter to Marvel.
Yeah.
Actually appeared in Iron Man number 127.
Really?
In the issue, Tony Stark's butler Jarvis
quits.
Quits.
Right. I knew this.
And he writes a resignation letter.
Yeah, right? I knew this. Yeah.
Now, that resignation letter that was posted in that comic was the resignation letter.
Get out.
And then from Cockrum to Marvel by mistake.
No.
3 issues later, the new writer for Marvel, Dave McLean, explained to readers that this was not the letter Jarvis had intended.
David Michelin.
Isn't that what I said?
Yeah, McLean.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't the...
he really can't read.
It wasn't the letter that Jarvis had intended to write. Due to a production error... The wrong text had been published.
Right.
Which is great.
That's awesome.
That's a great story. Did you know, Chris, that I'm sure you'd know this, that Marvel was home to the first openly gay superhero?
Yeah, that's Northstar.
Northstar,
yeah,
a French-Canadian mutant.
But I'm not trying to say anything about you know, homosexuality.
There's anything wrong with
it. No, there really isn't. Yeah. However, I find it very interesting the fact that Marvel made a Canadian...
Yeah.
The first openly gay hero.
Well, you know what? I guess they didn't want to do a red-blooded American boy.
Yeah, you know, I thought that was very...
But you know what? I think
odd.
It took courage for Marvel to
absolutely.
Do it. And
absolutely.
For
yeah, for sure.
Now,
for
Mario Puzo,
yes,
the author of The Godfather,
yeah,
found comic writing too difficult. Apparently,
really?
Stan Lee asked that he write a comic, and Mario said he couldn't do it; it was too hard.
Yep.
But he did end up going writing the first two Superman movie things.
Yeah.
Now, what we got to do before we leave that story is do some sort of Godfather Brando with cotton swab in his mouth line from the comics.
You know, Professor Xavier, I'm the best at what I do. As Wolverine, I will get whatever you need done.
You know, one day I can't even do it.
All right, well, enough all of right. that.
Yeah, that's going nowhere.
We appreciate you listening to today's show.
Oh, is that it?
Already? That is today's show.
It is, Stan Lee has trademarked his catchphrase, Excelsior!
As he should. I love all those cartoons with it. Anyways, as I was saying, we love the fact that you guys listen to today's show. If you have any of your own tidbits about Marvel and or DC, please email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or mailbox at bigbcomics.com. Go out, support your local comic book retailers, read lots of graphic novels and comics, especially the ones written by Mario Puzo, and have a great day.
See you next week.